Hi, this is Ethan Kapp
and Brett Kitchen with Savvy Money Radio,
and we're here to show you how to live financially forever young and how to pay less taxes and finance yourself to wealth and put your money in some really cool safe money places.
So today on the show, we're going to talk about why it might be a good idea for you to put your net worth on the internet, which is a little bit strange, but we'll discuss. This is a growing trend, apparently, of people who feel like that's a good idea. We're going to talk about the real reason you're broke, the money traps you need to avoid, and whether or not you're going to be financially forever young or on your financial deathbed, and how to avoid that happening to you. So recently, Ethan, you came across this, thought it was kind of funny, that people are putting their net worth online. Now, when I first heard that, I thought, that's insane. Why would I want somebody... the internet. I mean, I already have my privacy violated enough with everything else that people can. Google alone tracking me. They've got a satellite over my head, taking pictures of my every move. And now we want to put our net worth online. What's that all about?
Well, I don't know who actually said this quote. I've just heard it, but they said some people would actually rather stand naked in the street than actually show their financial situation. Obviously, I just said that in a different way than the quote probably actually was. But I think the point is a lot of people are embarrassed by their financial situation. And most people actually are with the true financial age that we talk about of, you know, they're behind financially. They're way behind. They're on their, some are on their financial deathbed right now.
Yeah.
You know,
there is a way to resurrect yourself. Luckily,
one toe in the grave.
Yeah, that's true. And it's not funny either. We shouldn't be laughing about that.
It's not. And you got to steer clear of some of the common myths that we talk about that get you to that point. But yeah, I found this website called Net Worth IQ. That's networthiq.com. And there's these individuals that actually just post their net worth online. And essentially the idea is everybody can look at it, but it helps you track it.
Hold yourself accountable.
Yeah. And in that regard, I actually think that's smart because most people don't really track what their net worth is.
Right.
You know, and make decisions every single day to make sure that that number is increasing. We all like, okay, you know, I'm putting money into my 401k or I'm putting it over here. And we get to the age of the ripe age or whatever, say 45, 50, 55. And we start looking at our financial situation or like, you know, I did everything that
the conventional, you know, financial wisdom told me to.
And I should have more money.
And I don't. Why not? Where did it all go?
What happened to the American dream? Why am I not going to be able to live my golden years sailing around the world or doing whatever I wanted to do? And have a good lifestyle at that point and retire even before the age of 65.
Well, and I guess so you're saying that you're for this. You think it's a great idea to put your net worth online.
Well, I'm more of a private person, so
you don't even use your Facebook account, let alone net worth online.
Not too much.
But
I see the value.
Concept.
I do see the value of Facebook, and I do see the value of this. But yeah, I thought it was really, really weird.
Okay, well, I think a lot of people are putting up screen names, and you know, people don't know who they necessarily are.
And you can't do that. But you know, there was one guy who has a net worth of like $500,000, roughly, and he has some in stocks, and he put his actual name on there.
He's nuts.
Well, it's more of a pride thing, I imagine. It's like, yeah, I got a net worth of $500,000.
Well, hopefully it's not his real name and he didn't put his credit card number on there too. But the point is important, and this is a story that goes back, and I don't even honestly know where it came from, but there was a group of kids throwing baseballs at a pitching camp, right? Here's how to become a great pitcher. Throw the ball. We're gonna get your speed up. You're gonna be throwing some serious heat. And what do you think it was? The number one thing that improved performance, was it technique? Was it coaching? What do you think it was? Any idea?
Posting the results online.
Nope.
Dang it.
It was a radar gun. The number one thing that changed and increased these kids' speed throwing baseballs was somebody standing there with a radar gun saying, that one just went 89 miles an hour, and they say, oh, I'm going to throw it harder next time. Really, well, an interesting accountability lesson.
Well, I struggled for many years to try to lose weight.
Well, let's clarify here. You were never 450. Well, you weren't like Biggest Loser material.
I wasn't, but it, you know, according to the BMI chart, I was, you know, what they call approaching obesity.
You are not approaching obesity.
According to the BMI
chart. You are not ever approaching obesity.
Yeah, I was like 210, and based on my height, if you look at the BMI chart with my height, it says
I think there's a level that you were at before you were going to hit the obese.
No, I'm serious. If you pull up the BMI chart, look, you know, I'm 6'1". At that height, at 210, I actually think I was in that, the lower level of obesity.
Okay, whatever. Okay. Well, tell your story.
Well, I'm just saying a lot of people struggle with this, right?
They do.
Right? They either, you know, at a point that they want to lose a lot of weight. You know, there's probably a good 30 pounds that I needed to lose, right?
I'm currently on my wife has gone diet. Huh. So I've been losing weight too, but anyway, go ahead.
Well, some people are on the look good naked diet, which is, you know, right before you get married.
Oh, that's a good one though. We like people who look good naked.
But I tried to find a lot of ways that would help me lose weight. And I remember when I was in cross country in high school, and I looked at the things that helped me be successful there. Like, I had to show up at a certain time. I had a team and there was competition. But I found an outfit called CrossFit, and it's one that I go here locally. But one of the things they do that's really interesting is this same exact concept is they have this clock on the wall. And they time each one of the events. They basically believe in functional movement, but you don't have to go run 5 miles every single day. You can do 5, 10, or 15 minutes of high-intense energy workout and still get to the level of shape that you want and lose weight, which I've been able to do, you know, in the last 6 months.
Yeah, I know. I've seen you. When we did our boxing match, what, a year ago or so, you were in the heavyweight division.
I was huffing.
And now you're welterweight. You're like down with Manny Pacquiao.
Yeah, and I've lost a good 25 pounds. I'm keeping it off. I'm excited about that. But after this, they actually post the results on the board. And so every night you can go look and you can see all the classes and what they do. So not only can you compete and then they show you the results of what your group did at the time level, but they also put it on the board for everybody. And I've seen that help me because these types of workouts I would never do at home by myself.
No,
literally.
I've seen just a little bit of what you've described, and there's no way that you would force yourself to do that.
But I see that, and so, you know, I think that's the concept here of the net worth IQ. Like,
let's bring it in for people to say, okay, so how can you take this and implement it in your life? And one of the ways that we help our clients is by creating a 101 plan blueprint that actually shows them, okay, based on what you're doing today, here's what you've got. And if you implement a strategy, then you can know with relative certainty what your savings, you know, options are going to be in 20 or 30 years or 10 or 15 years. What how much money you're going to have to work with in retirement. And so creating a plan like that is what most people never do. I mean, I've heard this 100 times. Have you heard this 100 times? Most people spend more time planning their vacations than they do their finances. I mean, yeah, it's true, but no, nobody changes because of it. Everybody wants to plan their vacations. Okay, so spend 1 hour, go to fleawallstreet.com, watch the video, and meet with a certified true financial age advisor, and you can have that plan just like you've got with your CrossFit, and you can know. I mean, you can hold yourself accountable, and it's a principle of success.
Well, to narrow it down, you have to really want to change. Like, in order for me to get to the point that I really had to lose weight, I mean, I realized that I needed to change, but I didn't really want to. I mean, you can say I wanted to, but I really didn't, or I would have done the necessary things to be able to do that. And I looked at myself and said, where am I not connecting the dots, and why am I not losing the weight? It's because I'm kind of a lazy person at home, right? And so, like, I get started on a plan, and I do it for 10 days, and then I'd stop. And what's great about what I did here is I actually go with a brother-in-law of mine, and so I go with a friend. I has all these great attributes that helped me do that I didn't have before. And so what I'm saying is I had to have a lifestyle change. And when it comes to finances, people have to look at that and say, hey, I got to have a simple plan that I can follow. And here's the outline, like in year one, year two, this is where I should be. And what's powerful about the 101 plan is that it's guaranteed. It's guaranteed.
Yeah, you're not going to lose anything.
If I'm putting $250 a month into my 401k plan, I don't really know what the return on that's going to be because my money's at risk.
They're going to quote you
and
what
there's
it's
no guarantee
be.
That I will actually make.
They're going to quote you. They're going to show you a nice big chart of what the stock market's
right.
Done
and
in
so
the last
they'll run you analysis like, okay, if you were to do 15% a year, you're going to have this huge amount of money at the end. And we've all seen how that didn't really turn out for people.
Here's the thing that gets me is a lot of us are entrepreneurial at heart. Some of us, you know, want to try to make a little extra money, or we start a business, or, you know, we're independent salespeople and we try to make extra sales to make money. A lot of moms, you know, will do piano lessons or 10 kids, finding ways to make more money. But why? What's it all for? In the end, it gets either spent on something that has no long-term value, or it gets taxed and taken away from us. So that's why it's so cool to have the 101 plan where you put it in there and you know it's going to be there. Or even worse, you put it into the market and it disappears when you get no value out of it.
Well, and I have to give credit where credit is due. We often talk that Dave Ramsey and Susie Orman don't really understand the 101 plan, or they'd actually talk about it. They just don't understand the power of it. But he came up and said something the other day is act your income. I actually think that's really right. Like, you know, act your income. And if you do that and have a plan. So everybody knows that you're supposed to actually spend less than you make, right? And pay yourself first. Most of us have heard that, but how many people really follow that? The power of the 101 plan is it sets that up for you that it can happen automatically, right? So that's what's really neat about this 101 plan is you can act your income, quote unquote, and have a really designated plan. And coming back to this net worth IQ is you don't have to go and post that online. You can see where you're supposed to be every single year and see that net worth grow.
Yeah, so let's move on from there. And one of the things that we wanted to talk about today is this really interesting article that I just love this lady. I mean, she cranks out some good stuff on MSN Money. Her name's Liz Pulliam Weston. And I think you can just search her and you can actually get on her email list, or you can go to MSN Money. And she just cranks out like one good article after the next about finances. And it's kind of her quest to help people understand the way finances work better. A lot of people don't like to think about it. I personally sometimes shun it. I'm just like, I don't want to think about it. I'll just let it go. And so anyway, I highly recommend her stuff. But in this article, it's called The Real Reason You're Broke. And she comes out and says, the reason why you're broke is probably sitting in your driveway. Literally.
Has four wheels. Turn it on.
Americans are spending more on their vehicles than ever before, about $8,600 on average, and it's driving some to the breaking point. Some people are spending 15 to 20% of their take-home pay just on car payments, and that doesn't include insurance, maintenance, gas, all the other expenses that we have with it. And so, you know, you're getting to this a situation where a lot of our expenses we can affect. We can affect how much we go out to eat, or we can go, you know, spend at the grocery store or on clothing or whatever. We can choose not to. Once you get locked into a car payment at $600, $700, $800, I was talking to a lady in my neighborhood. Like I mentioned, my wife's out of town. I was walking the dog, Tucker Buddy, who has lost a few pounds as well. He's on the CrossFit program.
Awesome.
And she pulls up and we start talking. She's got a new Hyundai Santa Fe or something. And she said, you know, we're just trying to downgrade. We've had cars that have cost us $900 a month. And I'm going, holy smokes, these aren't like super wealthy people. I mean, he's an insurance guy selling supplements. And she's like, yeah, our first car cost more, or we've bought cars that have cost more than our first house. That's a heavy deal. Because once you get locked into that, you're what, on it for 5 years, 6 years? And there's nothing you can do about it because you're always upside down in it for the first 3 years when you buy it new, almost always. And so you can't unload it, and you just get stuck. You get chained to this payment that you just can't get rid of. And that's why it's causing a lot of people to go broke, because they're putting money into their car instead of into a savings plan.
Well, we talk about this of financing yourself to wealth. And one of the cool things about a 101 plan is if you really want to go out and buy a car that's nice, I mean, we know what it's like to get in a new car and have the leather and the engine revs up and you can go fast. I mean, that's something that's pretty cool. And I think a lot of people want that. You know, hey, if I'm going to drive for 45 minutes a day or an hour to go to work, and I'm going to be in the gridlock of traffic.
It's a great status symbol, too. I mean,
I'd like to have a nice car, you know,
sure,
where the air conditioning actually works and things of that nature.
Well, but let's get reasonable here. Most people have cars that the air conditioner works, and they don't have to go buy a new car just to get air conditioning.
And you can buy a used car for a lot less and save money on it. You mean, you gotta love Sam Walton. I mean, this was back in the 80s and 90s, and he's driving around an old beat-up pickup truck.
Well, we just saw on the on the news today, a lady who's owned her car for 46 years. And not only has she owned the same car, she bought it for $3,200. The car's outlasted three husbands. And she buys lifetime warranty products. So she'll buy a lifetime warranty on her battery. And then she goes back and gets the battery renewed every single time she needs it for free. And so she's had 17 batteries installed in that car for free. She's had, what'd she say, seven mufflers?
Something like
she
that.
She got a lifetime warranty on her muffler. But see, the reason why this works out for these warranty companies is most people sell their cars so soon that the lifetime warranty is only as long as you own that car. She's owned this sucker for 46 years. It's got over 500,000 miles on it. She takes very good care of it. And she says in this video, she took it up to 120 miles an hour. She says, this car can't go 55. It just won't do it. It's too fast. She's taking it 121 miles an hour. But anyway, you know, you think about a woman. How much money has she saved over the years by not buying a new car every 5 years?
Lots.
I mean, hundreds of thousands. In many cases, people buy 10 cars over their lifetime at 30 grand a pop. That's 300 G's.
Well, let's take your neighbor, the insurance agent. Think about him back in the day when he bought his first car, and let's say it was 900 bucks then. If he just would have taken that money and actually put it into a 101 plan, or even put it into a tin can, he probably could have put it into a tin can, 900 bucks a month for 30 years, and he would have had more money.
Oh, yeah. There's no question about it. No, he's in his late 50s, and he's just started a new job. Well, he's not set financially, and a big reason is for that status symbol that he owned for some period of time. And
well, what do you think about this? I mean, some people say the reason you're broke, it's your fault.
It is your fault. Who else's fault is it?
Well, I think it's easy to pass. You know, everyone wants a scapegoat.
I mean, can anybody seriously justify the fact that they have not put aside the money, instead they've spent it somewhere else, and that's somehow their neighbor's fault, Uncle Sam's fault? I mean, who is ultimately to blame here? And if you want to be successful in finances over the course of your life, you do have to take the responsibility, because nobody else is going to do it for you.
I think one of our crusades is having people get control of their finances, get back control of that, instead of giving that money to the banks and making everybody else wealthy, right? I mean, that guy who's paying $900 a month, I mean, who is he making wealthy?
Yeah, definitely not himself.
Unless he's the owner of the credit union or the bank that actually he got the loan from. That money's not going back in his pocket.
Well, let's talk about some of the ways to cut down the amount of money that goes out to other people and instead keep it in your own pocket. Because there are some interesting people who have developed some ways to save money, and some of them are a little bit creative. We're going to hit a couple here. One of them is to stop using paper plates. Do you use paper plates in your house?
I do.
You could save money if you stopped. You know that, right? I'm just letting you know right here.
But I only use it for parties, because I don't want to like actually wash.
But you don't use them every day?
No.
Okay, so that's what I'm asking. Do you use paper plates every day?
Some people may find this really gross, but I use the same plate every day.
Do you wash it?
Yeah.
Then it's not gross. Well, it's gross if you use the same plate and you don't wash it.
I do wash it.
Okay, well then.
Well, there may have been one night I didn't watch it, but it pretty overall, much goes into the dishwasher every single night.
All right, well that's cool. So you can save money by stop using paper plates. You can stop using paper towels. Now this is a tough one because a lot of people find those very convenient. You could save a little money by using hand towels and washing those.
I'm sure glad it said stop using toilet paper.
That well, no, that's coming up, I think. stop using bathroom tissue. Use family cloths instead. Now this one I do not recommend. If I'm putting my stamp of approval on anything here, it's not that one.
Well, it comes back to the movement, like, I have two young children, right? And it's the whole thing, like, save the environment and go back to cloth diapers.
Right.
Like, you got to pay me a lot of money to do cloth diapers, man. I mean, I'm one of the new dads that I change a lot of diapers. I know my wife still changes more than I do, but I still change a lot of diapers. And look, if I had to, like, wash cloth diapers, I think I would get out of the baby business.
I didn't know you were in the baby business to begin with, but I do know what you're saying. I've had two youngsters myself. And pretty much the highlight of the diaper changing scenario is when you take the diaper and throw it in the trash, right? Get it out of the house, not take it and throw it in a pail and let it sit for 2 days while you accumulate more stinky diapers.
And this may make me sound a little arrogant, but look, I was in Argentina for 2 years serving a mission for my church, and I literally was in an area that I had to wash my clothes every single day, like by hand. And I think about that, of like having cloth diapers, like sitting there scrubbing on one of those boards every single day.
Why did you wash your clothes every day? Like, why didn't you just do it once a week?
Well, I only had like one or two shirts. And so, you know, you'd sweat and you get like the collar. And so
right, yeah. I understand what sweat does. It makes your collar yellow and your armpits
so
yellow.
So there was one shirt I was always washing and then hanging to dry.
Oh, so the next day you'd wear the other one.
Right.
Vice versa. Okay.
You know, I wanted to have some good hygiene when I was...
You probably could have invested in another shirt or two.
I could have. But I didn't.
Okay.
I mean, I was trying to be simple.
Anyway, so what are we talking about? Why are we talking about you washing your clothes?
Well, I was...
Cloth diapers?
Yeah, I just...
Well,
saying,
you don't have to wash your cloth diapers. You throw those in a dishwasher.
Well, I'm putting my stamp on approval on that thing.
Okay, let's move on. Don't use family cloths, please. All right, now there's another one.
And it's okay to use just normal diapers.
No, I give you two thumbs up for using real normal diapers.
I'm sure some people...
Now, my girlfriend from high school, her sister started a company that was all about the cloth diapers and the return to nature movement. And I think she's done okay because there's a lot of people that like that.
There are. I'm just not one.
No, me neither. Okay, now the one thing that I am also probably not going to recommend, which they say can save you just a boatload of money, is not using shampoo. Okay, so let's read this for a second. There's a growing movement called the no-poo movement. These people no longer use shampoo on their hair, substituting a warm water rinse for daily cleansing and an occasional wash in baking soda and water, followed by the apple cider vinegar rinse. If oil builds up on the hair, they brush a small amount of cornstarch in their hair to absorb the oil, then rinse it out. Proponents claim that the hair is healthier, easier to manage, and requires less styling products, probably because it's full of oil. They also claim that it's healthier than putting all of those chemicals on your head. For frugal souls, this method would eliminate the need to purchase shampoo and conditioner, which can become quite expensive. So how do you feel about the no-poo movement, Ethan?
Well, first and foremost, I think they should have a better name. I mean, transcending from the cloth diaper, I mean, we all know what is put into those. And so just the word poo.
We did a really nice transition there, going
yes,
from diapers to the no poo.
So I knew that was coming. So you got to pat me on the back for that one. But
okay.
Called the no shampoo movement, but the no poo movement. I mean, that sounds like, you know, don't eat certain foods so you only go number one versus number two.
It's a little bit dirty, but getting beyond that.
Well, I'm sure that can happen. If you're looking for ways to spend, that's one way to do it. But do you wash your hair every single day with shampoo?
I do.
Well, you can simply like do this thing. Like, you don't literally have to wash your hair every day. You could do it every other day and still be fine.
I can't. You want to know why?
Sure, tell me.
Because I cannot function as a human being. All I think about all day long, if I don't wash my hair that morning,
well, that's your...
is how my hair feels like
Well, that's your problem, but they've had studies that show that you really...
Nothing's going to happen to your hair if you don't wash it every day.
It's not like your hair's going to fall out.
Look at those guys who wear the dreadlocks. I mean, come on.
You could wash it probably every three days.
What are we talking about shampoo for? How much does a shampoo bottle cost? 99 cents? I mean, come on. So if you're...
Well, that's the other thing. You could buy, like, cheaper shampoo.
If you're going to save money, it's not going to be by stopping to use shampoo. Well, it's by getting your lifestyle under control. It's by acting your income, like you said, and looking at different ways that are substantial, not 30 cents a month.
Well, and it's actually being a man, too.
Well, that is a lot less expensive, but some people can't help that.
Because there's a study that actually say that shampoo in, like, the exact same bottle for a woman is, like, up to... double the amount.
Well, maybe women...
the cost.
Well, instead of going with no poo, they can go with man poo.
That's what I'm saying. Maybe women should just buy men's shampoo and that'd be okay.
Okay, well, that's fine. But I'm just saying, it's just an utterly preposterous argument that you're going to save a lot of money by not washing your hair with shampoo. What you're going to do... and let's talk about some of the ways that you can save money. One of them... and how you can put more money, say, into a 101 plan, a whole life dividend paying policy where your money grows every year guaranteed. This is a great way to secure some of your cash.
Well, here's a novel idea. Why don't people just pay themselves first into a 101 plan before they actually stop?
You're interrupting me. I was just going to say that you can find money that you previously didn't have by changing your deductions on your tax withdrawal. I know a guy who's on the verge of losing his house and got a $9,000 tax return.
And what do you do with it?
What in the world is he doing? I have no idea. But what in the world is he doing letting Uncle Sam have $800 a month of his income?
Some people like that tax
return. I know. What happens
with it? Well, they don't understand what's going on.
They get their money back. And then they go spend it. Whereas if you change your deductions and fix that up, a lot of people start at a job before they have kids or before they have a home or whatever. After a couple of years, they got two kids, they got a house, and now all of a sudden they're due some of that money back. And so they just let it build up. Oh, there's a $3,000. Yes, awesome. We're going to go on a trip. Well, what if instead, over the course of the year, you put that $300 a month away in a 101 plan and it was growing with interest and dividends that are not guaranteed, by the way, but are often paid out on these types of programs. And then you take it out and borrow against it and then pay yourself back. So doing things like that is much more logical than some of this other nonsense that we've just discovered or covered. And we should probably just move on because that's really getting me irritated. Another way that people need to secure their money is not using debit cards. I'm amazed at the risk that it is to use a debit card. Let's talk about some of the things people need to know about debit cards and why they probably shouldn't be using them.
So what do you say to somebody who doesn't want to use a credit card but wants to be able to...
Okay.
You go cash only. Should you go cash only?
Well, no. The reason, first of all, we have to identify why it's dangerous to use debit cards.
First of all, security risk, right?
It's absolutely could bankrupt you if somebody gets a hold of that and empties your bank accounts. And there is no fraud protection in many cases. There are some, you know, protections in place, but it's not near as, you know, as effective as what you will find with a credit card.
Well, here's a funny story. I went into my bank the other day and they always ask you if you have a debit card because they're always pushing that, right?
Yeah, because they get paid less. They have to pay less.
And so I say, I don't use the debit card. They're like, well, why wouldn't you use a debit card? And so I go into the whole explanation of why I don't use it. And I, for some reason, they look at me like I'm a fool for why I would not want to use a debit card.
And this is a $9 an hour employee standing on the other side of the counter.
And so I've got people behind it. I'm like, well, I don't use a debit card. And they're like, well, why wouldn't you want to use a debit card? Like, you're a fool for not wanting to use a debit card. I'm like, well, because it has a huge...
viability. Look, if I got 10 grand in my checking account and somebody steals my debit card and empties my account, what am I going to get my 10 grand back?
No, and to this day, I've only had one. I've probably told over five different tellers this. To this day, I've only had like one person say, you know, that's probably true. You know, you're smart by not using a debit card. They're all like, well, you should maybe consider it. Should I just send it out? It's like, do you not get what I'm telling you here?
So, yeah, I think people need to understand there are some significant exposure. And in terms of like fraudulent charges and things like that, you do not have as much protection. And
we're not saying you have to use a credit card either. Look, you can do a cash only system.
My wife uses cash only. It's been the best thing she's ever done because she knows how much money she has. She can budget it out. She knows when she's going to get more money. And it's great for me too because I say, look, you know what? This is how much money you have. When it's in black and white right in front of her, she knows. In a credit card, it's unlimited.
I mean, some debit of the card, best things people can do is just cut up both credit cards and debit cards.
Yep. Now, another reason why debit cards actually cost you more is because of overdraft fees. I mean, these banks are going insane with overdraft fees. Here in Salt Lake, there's a bank called Zions Bank, and unless they've changed their policy, they were charging you $8 a day for even $1 in your overdraft.
Who's making out on that one?
Well, it's absurd because my friends were actually out of town, and they accidentally paid a bill with their old Zions Bank account, and they were gone for 4 days. They get back. By the time they're back, that's what, $36 in fees, and they didn't even know about it until it was too late. There was nothing they could do about it. So overdraft is a major problem. And I was at US Bank just the other day, sitting there next to, standing there as I was doing my banking, and somebody came in and said, well, you know what, I paid the bill, but I also put the money in, but the bill came out before the money went in, and so I got charged for the overdraft on the first one, and then the second one, and the third one before it registered that I had put money in that account. So she had ended up paying like three overdraft fees because of the way that they account for your debit card. So just don't use them, please. Don't use your debit cards. Use a credit card or use cash. If you're gonna use debit cards, I mean, one procedure to maybe follow is to open up a different account that doesn't have all your cash in it and use it that way, but I still don't recommend it. So that's gonna be about it for this week. I think we covered some really important things that people can do, not only to save money, like stop using paper plates and shampoo, but legitimate things that you should be looking at, which is your deductions, which is how much you're contributing to your 401k. Can you take some of that and redirect it towards a 101 plan or a safe and secure place to invest your money? And also, get out of the car business. We have no need for a new car every 3 years. And it really does cost you, over the course of your lifetime, hundreds of thousands of dollars that could be going right into a nice little nest egg that you can retire on. So for Brett Kitchen
and Ethan Kapp,
thanks for listening to Savvy Money Radio, and we will see you next time.